This is the State of Things, broadcasting live from Triad Stage in downtown Greensboro. I'm Frank Stachow. The Wilmington Massacre of 1898 has been a focus of some attention in recent years, but for decades, this ugly chapter of North Carolina's history was glossed over. Author John Russell calls it the unsecret secret. His latest novel, All the Right Circle, centers on the centennial of the racial massacre in the late 1990s. Protagonist Jack Callahan is an attorney for one of North Carolina's prestigious families that happens to own a newspaper. Jack faces personal and professional dilemmas as he learns about the deeper history of his clients and their ties to white supremacy in this state. John Russell is a Greensboro native, and he joins me now to talk about his novel, All the Right Circles. Hello, John.
Thanks for having me, Frank. Pleasure to be here.
It's good to have you here. I gave a little bit of a summary, but tell us a little bit more about the plot in All the Right Circles.
Well, I thought you did an excellent job. I mean, that's great. You should have written my flap copy. It's a novel about insiders and outsiders at the first level of it. This young man that you mentioned, Jack Callahan, he moves with his mom from New Jersey to Raleigh, North Carolina in the 1960s, grows up on the wrong side of the tracks. In Raleigh, they have a name for that. It's the Beltline, outside the Beltline. Yeah. That's what they have, their own special name for it. But then he finds himself after one thing and another, a good marriage, strategic marriage. He's in the country club crowd, and then he finds himself defending the owners of a family newspaper against the nefarious Wall Street takeover mm-hmm. by the villainous Victor Broman.
So this is cool, because we'll pause you there. So right now we're pulling for this local Southern newspaper owner against the depredations of Wall Street.
Right, and then you should be. And then he discovers what you referred to as the non-secret secrets, that the people he's defending were involved in one way or another in this thing that no one talks about, which was essentially the takeover of the state in the 1890s by what became known as the Jim Crow regime. It was in under the aegis of the Democratic Party in those days. And it was a very real thing that happened. I mean, it was a real takeover. Beginning in the mid-1890s, North Carolina probably had the most integrated, most progressive state government of any state in the country, North or South. I mean, that's a stunning thing to realize. Right. But the Republican Party in those days was biracial, and the state's biggest city, Wilmington, which was bigger than Charlotte in those days.
Now, in a little more than a generation after the end of slavery, African Americans had worked themselves into the business community, integrated in the city of Wilmington, and become highly successful, so that the most prosperous state, the most prosperous city in North Carolina and a majority black city was in fact Wilmington, North Carolina, within a generation and a half of the end of slavery.
And absolutely, that's true. And then there was what were referred to as the Wilmington coup or the Wilmington massacre, or it used to be called, when I was a boy, the Wilmington race riot. It was not a race riot, actually. It was an absolutely intentional act of political terrorism, which overthrew the elected government of Wilmington and then led to the disenfranchisement, largely effective disenfranchisement of African American men, and the onset of Jim Crow. Very avoidable. Didn't have to happen, but did happen, and it was not talked about.
Right. But also very punishable, and that never happened either. So when you commit a crime and don't get punished, then what you see is the aftermath of that. So now fast forward, okay, all of that happens, a story that, as you say, as a young man growing up in North Carolina, but for the grace of an excellent teacher, you would not have known about yourself.
Well, that's true. I mean, I grew up in Greensboro here during the Civil Rights period, and I actually had an excellent African-American woman teaching me what actually happened in Wilmington in the 1890s at Kaiser Junior High School and then later at Grimsley Senior High School. And I thought everybody knew that stuff. She didn't get it out of the textbook. She just, mimeographed. Remember the mimeograph machines?
Yeah, yeah.
She just mimeographed this stuff and gave it to us. And I said, well, this is horrible, and internalized it. Kind of like the segment you had before, you know, you have to internalize the truth of what actually happened. But I was fortunate enough to do that, and then I went to college at Chapel Hill and encountered the very professor who wrote the textbook, who essentially had rendered the entire thing that happened in one paragraph that said nothing. And that was the official word for years and years and years. Not true now.
Right, right.
Not true now.
We know a little bit more now.
In 1972, that would have been true.
By the way, I want to get back to the book, but you did have a chance to meet that professor in 1972.
Right, and I don't know that... It may not have gone well. I mean, I had... I was in high school then. I had hair down to my shoulders. I was going door-to-door for George McGovern, and I was at a conference in Chapel Hill, and I was sitting beside him. And he looked at me, and I looked at him, and the first words out of my mouth were, well, Professor so-and-so, why didn't you tell the truth about what happened in the 1890s in your textbook? At which point the graduate student seated beside me basically jerked me out of my chair, took me outside, and said, why did you say that to him? And I looked at him. I had a lot of attitude in those days. I looked at him, and I said, hey, man, why didn't you say that to him? That's like your job, right?
Right on.
You know. So anyway, it didn't go well.
The idea is that this story, in one way or another, has been percolating with you for a long time. You actually started writing in 2010, right? And
right.
Then put it together. So it's set in Raleigh, 1990. Again, at this point in the history of North Carolina, we're not telling the truth about it. And this lawyer figures out what happens in the process of defending the very family that was at the center of this. Maybe I can ask you to read from the book right from the beginning.
Sure, okay.
And give us a sense of what's happening in the book.
Yeah, I'll read the very first paragraph, and you get a sense of the voice of Jack Callahan, the main character. And remember, he's kind of the kid. He refers to himself as the Irish Jew from New Jersey, plunked in the middle of this Southern society. So this is the first paragraph. A highway makes a circle around my hometown, dividing it neatly in two. The old families of Raleigh own drafty mansions inside the Beltline, where they walk from house to house and socialize. Everyone else lives outside the Beltline, a sprawling tract filled with folks who drive around in cars and don't know each other. My mother has always liked living out there and being alone in the crowd, but I got tired of it growing up. When I came back from New York, I took a law job and moved downtown. Then Prin and I got married. She's from one of the old families. Over time, I've done a personal makeover to fit in with her friends, sporting snappy, casual clothes and practicing easy chit-chat. I even acquired a drafty mansion for myself.
John Russell reading from his latest novel, All the Right Circles, my guest now on The State of Things. So it's fascinating. This could easily have become a melodrama about, you know, sort of a dark secret in the family's past. But you complicate things by this kind of social climbing, right? Jack, who wants to fit in, he wants to be inside the Beltway. Tell us more about Jack and his progress through this book.
Well, Jack has a complicated relationship with his mother, first of all. And, you know, any of you boys who have a mother, you sort of love your mama, right? Well, his mother is very bohemian. She doesn't want to fit in. She's a professor at a college in Raleigh, actually a high school. But she is working on a long biography of this English novelist named E.M. Forster. They live out away from everybody, and she doesn't want to fit in. And Jack, rebelling against his mother, all he wants to do is fit in. So this is what drives him upward and onward. But he also has this understanding that something is not right. Something's not right with his boss, with his law firm, with these things that people don't actually talk about. And eventually the public secrets that are kept percolate down into private life. And he's unable to tell the truth to his wife or his family about what he does or what goes on. and the people around him aren't able to tell the truth. Truth-telling becomes a big thing for him, and he tries to find a way to do that towards the end of the book.
Well, it's fascinating because it's a big thing for all of us, right? We get a project, we set the plan, we get the thing going in the right direction, and then we discover something that upends all of that. And what do we do about this well-laid plan, which, by the way, we have genuinely worked hard toward, and it ultimately would have been a good goal by anybody's measure. So you've got all that going for you, and then you say, except I just learned this.
Right, and success actually, I won't be a plot spoiler, but he does attain success in the means of him attaining success for his clients, but then he begins to question the value of it. It's a classic issue of the hero figuring out, you know, did what I do, is that really worth it? Now, another thing about it that he takes solace from, however, is there's this generational change. What happens towards the end of the book is that this African-American woman named Kajana Blunt, who incidentally he went to law school with, he finds out that her family was one of the African-American families who was kicked out and terrorized in the Wilmington coup, and that she has been living her life, that she grew up in Durham in the book, she's been living her life in order to attain political, a political measure of accomplishment that she felt her family was denied. And that's a classic story too. Mm-hmm. So towards the end of the book, they become allies in her quest to become Attorney General of North Carolina.
Maybe I can ask you to read from that and set up this next passage.
Sure,
for us.
Okay. I'll read this passage. This is when she has to do something that's hard for her. She has to ask him a favor to organize a political fundraiser at the home of the man whose ancestor was one of the principal architects of the Wilmington coup. She ends up having to ask the people she doesn't like to help her raise money for her campaign. And Jack helps her. And so this is the scene at the fancy, big, drafty mansion in Raleigh. Again, Jack is speaking. I kept an eye out for Kajana. She appeared with her finance man Chip in tow as the first guests were walking up the curved driveway. I gave Kajana a kiss on the cheek. Chip shook my hand and reached for the RSVP printout at the name tag desk. Geez, Jack, he said after a quick scan. Everybody in town is coming. Why don't you just look out for the governor, Chip? I'll show Kajana the room. Of course everybody's coming. She was already shaking hands, and I gently commandeered her elbow and led her to the living room, which had been arranged with extra chairs for her speech. Kajana, there's a podium by the fireplace, and it's mic'd, but I don't think you'll need it today. Sometimes people like to speak from the stairs up the front hall, but you've got too many people here. That's a good thing. This'll do fine, she said, eyeing the podium. She studied photos three deep over the far wall, a small history of governor and senator making, interspersed with inscribed portraits of Democratic presidents from Wilson to Clinton. I'd looked at that wall 100 times and never noticed something I noticed today. All the photos featured white men, except one where a young lady in a very big hat doused the bow of a Navy ship with champagne. I know what you're thinking, Kajana, I said. She turned from the wall to face me. Jack, I need to say something to you in a very nice way. What's that? Don't you ever think you know what I'm thinking.
John Russell, reading from his latest novel, All the Right Circles, talking about that today on The State of Things. Of course, we've got links at our website, stateofthings.org, if you want to learn more. So this really, there are two historic periods that are featured in this book, 1890s and 1990s. Why set this in the 1990s, and what's relevant, do you think, or is it, to what's going on today?
The 1990s came first for me because I thought it was really the end of an era. I was depicting a society in Raleigh and North Carolina that was coming to a close. I mean, the people who came to power in the 1890s, they, for one reason or another, just the march of progress, were no longer as relevant as they were. In Raleigh today, in the Triangle, the people in charge would, if not for coronavirus, would be flying off to London before they'd be sitting around figuring out who was going to be in the debutante ball. Mm-hmm. But in the old days, you'd have to figure out who's going to be in the debutante ball. But that doesn't go on so very much. I think politically I began writing, and you made an allusion to it, I began writing this in 2010, frankly, because what was happening in the late 1890s was happening again in the North Carolina post the Republican takeover of the legislature. And those of us who were alive to that saw it. And actually, your whole show today is reverberated with that message. But I think that, you know, the book is titled All the Right Circles, and history moves in a circle as well as it moves in a line. It moves in both. It moves in a line and it moves in a circle. And the circle that you have is that people in power don't like to give it up. And when Obama won North Carolina in 2008 with an outpouring of biracial voting sentiment, and he's a man of mixed race himself, suddenly I'm right back in Wilmington, because that was the scenario in 1896, which in 1898 led to violent reaction. And so why not think about that? If you think about it and you tell the non-secret secrets, then maybe you're not going to have the repeat in time.
John Russell, author of All the Right Circles. John, thank you so much for being with us. You can find out more about the rest of the book and everything we've talked about at our website, stateofthings.org. Next, Movies on the Radio. Want your favorite film about a place. Movies like Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing can take you to Brooklyn, while Bull Durham will take you right to downtown Durham. So, movies about place. If you want to be on the next Movies on the Radio, sot@wnc.org is the place to send the email and be on our next program. Brianna Tam is with us. She's going to play us out. She performed for us today, and you can find out more about her. She's going to perform with her band, Camus and the Crew, this Friday at 9 at Bull's Tavern in Winston-Salem. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacio. Once again, Brianna Tam.